Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
This bitch over here just told me he has all this multimedia that he wants wants me to watch and see. And I feel lacking because my last film had none of this. None of the bells and whistles. Anyways, I come to you from Medellin, Colombia, where I am recording on land belonging to the Karina peoples.
And I come to you from Detroit, Michigan, where I'm recording on land belonging to the Ojibwe, Wyandotte, Ottawa, and Potawatomi people.
These are some of many nations that are still very much out here doing their thing. And we would like to acknowledge that. We would like to snap to that.
Yes, snap, snap.
I love that he said that. As a youngin, I'm like, what do you know about snaps?
You know nothing about snaps.
Who told, what auntie told you about snaps? Huh? So this is, I hope this makes sense to the listeners. I don't know
I
when
like that 31 is now a youngin.
Don't come for me like that. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. So this is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. We be drinking and we be swearing.
Heck yes.
Yes. We're doing it.
Mm-hmm. And we be snapping.
We be snapping and we be thinking yes. That 31 is like 12 somehow.
So today we're going to be drinking a kamikaze. The cocktail, not the shot.
I love that for us. Mm-hmm. I love that you haven't had this before.
I've like never had a kamikaze.
Wow. And you from upstate New York. Like I've been in dive bars in upstate New York and this was my go-to.
Yeah.
Because it tastes like juice.
Yeah. I think maybe the name of it is kind of a turnoff to me.
Fair.
Yeah.
And you have like taste. So probably has prevented you from having the kamikaze.
Mm-hmm. The shot sounds a lot more intense than the cocktail does. The cocktail is kind of just a cocktail.
Yeah, the cocktail is... This is my first time having the cocktail form. I've only had the shot.
Yeah. So when I realized this week that my story was from the 80s, I became very upset with myself for choosing another fucking story from the 1980s because the cocktails are trash. It's not okay. They're garbage and nobody likes them. But luckily, I was able to find the recipe for the kamikaze when I searched for cocktails from the 80s. And I was like, this sounds like 80s trash. But then when I looked at the recipe, I was like, oh, actually, that sounds incredibly drinkable and delicious.
It's really nice.
Yeah. So when I was researching the history of the kamikaze, if you're going to Google, if you're going to ask Jeeves about the history of a kamikaze.
Jeeves be knowing.
Most of the sources that you're going to find will claim that the drink was invented at a bar on a naval base in Japan in the 1950s. So it was invented in the 1950s, but didn't make its way to the U.S. until the 1970s. I kind of feel like most people attribute this story to this cocktail because of the name kamikaze. But the correlation ends there, especially because most of these same sources that you're going to find will also say, in the same like paragraph, will say that the kamikaze was initially created as a shot, but was so drinkable that it was eventually scaled up to a cocktail. But shots weren't a thing in the 50s. So the math ain't mathin'.
Damn.
It don't make no sense.
So wait, when did shots become a thing? They weren't a thing?
Like the 70s? Yeah.
Damn. Okay, so they really be lying. Okay.
Yeah.
Most people don't know.
I mean, I'm sure they were around before that in theory, but like shots as this like thing, this like cultural thing, were not a thing until the 70s.
Shit, okay. I did not know that.
I actually almost did the shot version because I was like, it would be fun to talk about the history of shots because we've never done that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to have something that I can drink during the whole story. So maybe someday we will do a shot. There's a lot of shots out there. And there's like layered shots. That would be fun.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Like a B-52 or something. Yeah. Another weird military related shot, but they, yeah. Anyways.
80s feels 80s.
B-52. Yeah. I think so.
The band.
Yeah. No, I think it is 80s. And it's like layered with like different colors of liqueurs.
Yeah. I think I've seen the shot and it looks very, very colorful.
Yeah. So thankfully, I did a little bit more digging and I was able to find an article with way more believable information. Mm-hmm. And they actually cited their source information, which basically never happens when I'm doing cocktail research. I never find anyone that that provides sources.
Wow.
I always just have to like take people at their word and hope for the best. So this website believes that the kamikaze did not become popular until the 1970s because it wasn't actually invented until the 1970s.
Yeah.
That'll
do it.
They say that because it was initially created as a shot, it was particularly popular with young people, especially New Yorkers, like people who like to go to the club on the weekend.
Not the club.
And like sporty people, like young people who like skiing and like sailboats and shit.
Okay.
For whatever reason, the kamikaze was big with these like bougie white people in the 70s. So they point to two possible origin stories. One was taken from the pages of Motorboating and Sailing magazine, which claims that a bartender named Tony Loriano created the kamikaze in New York City in 1972. The story goes that he originally wanted to name the drink, the shot, the Jesus Christ Superstar, naming it after a popular, famous Broadway show.
I live my life for that musical. and I wish I didn't, because I think it was 2019 where my Spotify like rewind really came for me. And I didn't need it like that.
I am not a musical person, but I do know some of the songs from that. I think that I've seen it.
Well, they remade it with John Legend. And like they didn't need to do that to me. Because I still listen to it. I've listened to it in the last week. But I'm not listening to it like I used to. So leave me alone.
I don't know nothing about the John Legend version. It's I've only seen good. The like 60s or 70s one. So the story goes, he wanted to call it the Jesus Christ Superstar, but people thought that the name was too weird and too long for a shot. So he changed it to a kamikaze because it was so strong and like, you know, deadly.
No.
Which, like, gross, but that tracks for the 70s.
Yeah, okay.
But they also, in the same article that I found online, reference an article from Ski Magazine from the 70s that claims that the kamikaze was originally invented in Florida in the early 70s, but didn't really become popular until it made its way to New York. So as is the case with a lot of cocktails, there's no way to know which of these two stories is absolutely certain. It's just like, after the fact, some like weird travel magazine, ski magazine was like, oh.
But like the fact that the ski magazine knows about a cocktail in Florida is suspicious.
But they apparently, it was such a popular shot at ski resorts.
Oh, okay.
That they started to do some research of their own and wrote an article about it for Ski Magazine.
Okay. Yeah. That's connecting more of the dots. I'm just like, what?
Yeah, okay. That's the same thing with why the like motorboating and sailing magazine, because it was like popular with people that like to go sailing. So they're like, "What? Okay. Why is this so popular? Let's look into it." So we don't know for sure which of these stories is true or what the real origin story is, but we do know for a fact that by 1975, the kamikaze was popular enough that one liquor company was selling pre-mixed kamikaze cocktails in a bottle.
Wow.
Yeah. And while the shot version of the kamikaze was really mostly just vodka, it's basically like straight vodka with like a drop of flavor. The cocktail version is much more balanced. It's meant to be drinkable, sippable.
Yeah, sippable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically just a margarita with vodka instead of tequila.
Mm.
Almost in the same ratio and everything.
Like, oh, wow.
Very
similar
to a margarita, but with vodka.
Mm. Delicious.
So when it comes to the cocktail version, they increase the ratio of mixers to spirits. So it's two parts vodka to one part triple sec, one part lime juice. And we know by the 80s, the delicious and drinkable cocktail version was almost as popular as the boozier shot version.
Mm.
So let's take a little taste here, see what we think. This is literally my very first taste of a kamikaze.
Wow. That's crazy. But I love that. It's delicious.
It's fucking delicious.
Yeah.
I feel like might like it better with tequila.
Oh, yeah.
Same. But it's very tasty.
Yeah.
It's like sweet and tart and limey and wonderful.
It tastes like juice.
I also feel like the guy that I'm going to be talking about today, the man of the hour in my story, was probably the kind of person who really loved kamikazes. I don't have any actual facts to base that on, but it just seems like that's his vibe.
He was a white man.
A white man, yes, for sure.
Okay.
All right. So,
this drink is going to be gone real quick.
So today I am going to be talking about a very colorful populist congressman from Ohio named Jim Traficant. Have you heard of him?
Never heard of him.
Really? You don't know him?
Not at all.
The whole time that I was writing the story, I was like, Stephanie knows this. Stephanie's like been sitting on the story and she's going to be pissed that I stole it from her.
No.
It's so scandalous and so
weird. Is it? Damn it. Now I'm pissed that you stole it from me, even though I don't know.
Yeah. So Jim Traficant started his career as a mob busting sheriff and an advocate for the unemployed steelworkers living in the Rust Belt in Ohio.
Okay.
But his political career really took off after he was accused of taking bribes from the mafia bosses he was supposed to be fighting against. And he defended himself in court by saying,
no, he didn't. Yes.
He wasn't corrupt. Everyone else in the government was.
Oh, I love this. This story is so delicious.
I would like to propose a toast, raise a glass.
Everyone did it but me.
The old, I know you are, but what am I defense?
Oh my God. A grown man. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'm not corrupt. You're corrupt. Hold on to your butts.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
So my story today begins in a small city in Northeast Ohio called Youngstown.
Okay.
Youngstown is about, what, like an hour east of where you grew up?
Yeah. It's like maybe closer to 2 hours. I've never been to Youngstown, but I hear good things, which is odd to me. Yeah. I hear good things about the music scene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense because it was like a really rough town for a very long time. So it would make sense that the arts would be cool there. So in the early part of the 20th century, Youngstown was booming because all the steel mills in town meant that there were a lot of good middle-class jobs. People had a little bit of money. They were sending their kids to college. They're living the dream.
Yeah.
The middle-class dream.
They were in the heart of it all, if you will.
Yes, that they were. There was that video that was like all the things to do in Ohio, and it was just like a big ketchup bottle and like a big...
Yeah, world's largest bread basket for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, the Longaberger Basket Factory. Or the offices for the Longaberger Basket Company.
What the fuck is that?
It's a family-run basket company, and their corporate headquarters, the building is shaped like a giant basket. So it is the world's largest basket, but it is an actual basket factory. The company headquarters are based in this giant basket. And the only reason I know about this is because the company went out of business a couple of years ago. One of the members of the family, after the company went bust, moved to Williamsburg and applied to work at Whisk and came in, and my assistant manager had heard of the Longaberger Basket Company and saw her name was whatever, Susan Longaberger.
Yeah.
And was like, wait, what?
That
showed me.
Hysterical. Do you guys hire her?
No. This is some like rich white lady. Yeah, Ohio. No.
She would have been the worst employee
you've
ever had in your life. Yeah.
Yeah. She would have ended up quitting after she realized it's just a retail shop. We're not.
Yeah. Would probably be like her first job too. So
totally.
We don't need that.
No.
You need your first job when you're 15 and a half.
Yeah. But yeah, so when I was watching that video, I saw that giant basket. I was like, I know that. That's the Longaberger basket.
I've never seen, as an Ohioan, I've never seen any of those things before in my life. And I never knew that they existed. I thought that stuff only happened in the plains. Yeah. Here I am living in a state with all of this big ass shit for no reason.
When I was in college, I went on a road trip with some girlfriends of mine, and we went to a bunch of those things. Not the ones in Ohio, unfortunately, but we went to like the world's largest bottle of ketchup.
Yeah.
And apparently there are two, but we went to one of the two world's largest balls of twine.
Yes.
You told me. Because apparently one's by weight and one's by volume or something, which don't make no sense.
No one needs either of them, but okay.
Yeah. Apparently we didn't know this at the time, but we went to the less famous of the two. The more famous one is in Minnesota. We went to the one in Kansas.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. But Dev is going to kill me, so I'm going to get back to the story. So yeah, things are good in Youngstown, but there was also a ton of bars in the town because it's all like factory working men that are like going to go for a drink and get like a sandwich or something on their lunch break. But basically all the factories had round-the-clock shifts. There were like shifts that started at midnight. So people were working overnight. So there were all of these after-hours drinking places, like bars that were basically illegal, that were open 24 hours for these factory workers. And gambling became a really big problem in the town. Yes. And so the city was not big enough to really support their own mafia, their own like wing of organized crime. But Youngstown is basically right smack dab in the middle between Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And both of those cities have their own mob presence. Because Pittsburgh and Cleveland are run by two different mob families, like Cleveland has their own, Pittsburgh has their own mob presence. So Youngstown, because it's like right in the middle, basically becomes a battleground as these two families try to fight it out to figure out who's going to take control of the city that is filled with bars and people who love to gamble.
Okay.
Yeah. There's also like a college, there's sports.
Yes. So
gambling is huge.
There's a big college there.
Yeah. But so both of these families set up gambling rings in Youngstown. And for such a small place, organized crime became really deeply entrenched in the fabric of this small city. Disappearances, shootings, and deadly bombings, especially car bombings, become really common. And like, it was not uncommon to find bodies floating in the Mahoning Reservoir. Like, yeah. What? In this tiny little city, I think there was like at the time, like 180,000 people that lived there at its like height of population in the 50s. So in the 60s, in the 1960s, the Saturday Evening Post called Youngstown Crime Town USA, writing, quote, "Officials hobnob openly with criminals. Arrests of racketeers are rare, convictions rarer still, and tough sentences almost unheard of."
Wow.
Because basically the city government was just like
bought
and paid for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I guess a small city, it wouldn't take a lot of coins.
No, yeah. So as if things weren't bad enough already, in the 1970s, the steel mill jobs started to dry up. In 1977, one of the biggest mills in town completely shut down. And over the next 5 years, two more plants closed too, taking with them tens of thousands of good middle-class jobs. So after this, drugs became a really big problem in Youngstown too.
Yes. Yeah.
And mafia violence got even worse. Enter James Traficant.
Oh, perfect timing.
Yes. Most people knew him as Jim or Jimbo.
Stop it.
Jimbo. He was a former college football star who now ran a drug program in Youngstown. But in 1972, yes, yeah. Anti-drug, not pro.
He was DARE. He was a DARE officer. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely, yes. So in 1979, he decided to run for sheriff. He ran as a Democrat on an anti-drug platform and claimed that the incumbent sheriff had ties to the mafia, which like shocked no one. everyone's like, oh yeah, he's got to. Everyone else does. Why not? So he won his election in 1980 and he promised to fight against the violence gangs that were terrorizing Youngstown.
Marge joined a violence gang.
His one is tutoring job and joined a violence gang. Old Jimbo also positioned himself as an advocate for the down on their luck citizens of Youngstown and became a local folk hero he went to jail for 3 days for refusing to carry out a court order to foreclose on the homes of unemployed steel mill workers.
Okay.
That's yeah. Cool. The government was like, you have to foreclose on these homes. You're the sheriff. This is your job. And he's like, nope, not doing that.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was supposed to go to jail for 100 days. But he got out after 3 days.
Okay.
So the people of Youngstown were like completely fucking in love with this guy.
Lived
completely
their in love life with him. For him.
Absolutely. But then in 1982, he was indicted by a federal grand jury and charged with accepting bribes from the mafia during his campaign for sheriff. He pleaded not guilty, telling the press, quote, to all those politicians who want me to resign, go fuck yourselves.
Oh, I love that. Yes. I love that. I love such an explicit press statement.
Yes.
Go fuck yourself.
A statement that you can't actually print in the paper.
I mean, I feel like that would be me as a politician. Like right? When asked something I don't want to ask. Answer, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So his trial started in Cleveland in 1983. And the FBI had literal mountains of evidence against him, saying that he had accepted bribes from both the Pittsburgh and the Cleveland mob over $160,000, which was a big fucking ton of money for a sheriff in Youngstown, Ohio in the 1980s. In the 1980s. Oh my God.
He had a Rolls Royce.
Literally,
He's you've seen Coming to America. Is that rude to ask?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. That was such a formative movie, but I'm like, I don't know if white people see it. But
or this one has.
Kemi, when he's in that hot tub, that's what this is giving to me. This man has a hot tub.
In his limo.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's leopard print for no reason.
Yeah.
And I love it.
But so basically what they were alleging was that Jim Trefecant had accepted money from the Pittsburgh family for his campaign and accepted this money, agreeing not to interfere with their business ventures once he became sheriff, once he was elected. They're like, we'll give you money to be elected if you promise once you are elected that you're on our side.
Okay.
But then the Cleveland family offered him even more money if he offered to protect their interests instead of the Cleveland family's interests. And he was like, it's more money is more money. I can get two hot tub limos. The FBI just sort of happened coincidentally to be in Northeast Ohio investigating the mob one day. And they were searching a mobster's house. I think the guy had just died, may have been shot or whatever. They're searching his house and they discovered a collection of tapes. And on these tapes, they heard a conversation between some of the Cleveland mob bosses and another man whose voice they didn't recognize at first, but the longer they listened, the clearer it became.
Oh no.
That the other voice was Sheriff Trefecant agreeing to accept $100,000 for his campaign if he promised that the sheriff's office wouldn't interfere with their business once he was elected. He also, on these tapes, said that he was worried that the Pittsburgh family was going to come after him because he's double-crossing them.
Yeah.
So he also...
Can I ask, what is their business? Is it sanitation?
The
mafia business?
All I know is there was a lot of gambling stuff. I don't know if there was a legitimate front that they laundered money
through. No, but gambling will do it. Yeah. That's how you launder money. Casinos. Yeah. Okay, cool.
But I don't know if gambling was actually legal in Youngstown at the time or not. But either way, I know there was a lot of stuff that was not supposed to be happening. That's super vague, but that's as far as my knowledge goes. So he agrees to also, he tells Cleveland the Cleveland family, that he will go after the Pittsburgh family's rackets if the Cleveland family promises to protect him.
Yeah.
Because he's like, they're going to fucking kill me. He's like, I don't want to be dead in 6 months. Like,
damn.
He's... You know. But so he is saying all of this on tape. I don't think he knew that he was being recorded.
Okay. I have a question. Happening. Like, this guy who has tapes, like, is he like an informant? Like, why is he making tapes? Do we know?
So I think this was just all being paranoid? Done for protection. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
This was
okay.
Like one mafia guy, one mafioso. But they were all part of the same Cleveland family. But I'm not sure exactly why these tapes were made.
Okay.
But one of the guys was killed and these tapes were found in his house. The FBI searched his house and just found all of these tapes.
Yeah.
He was like a high up person in the...
Oh, okay. Okay. So if he gets killed, they're going to investigate. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So on these tapes, he also hatched a plan on how to defend himself legally if the Pittsburgh family decided to turn him in for accepting bribes. Because apparently the Pittsburgh, like, different families sort of owned different parts of the government in Youngstown. Seems okay. Like Cleveland kind of had the police, but Pittsburgh had the justice system.
Oh.
A lot of judges were in the pockets of the Cleveland or the Ooh. Pittsburgh family. So he's like, if I go to court, if they accuse me of accepting bribes and one of their judges oversees this trial, what am I going to do? And so they're like, all of these people sit down on these tapes and they're hatching a plan. And he's like, okay, this is what we do.
Oh, no.
If the Pittsburgh family alleges that you have accepted bribes from them, you go to court and you say that you were just so angry at the crooked, corrupt government in Youngstown that you accepted Pittsburgh's bribes because you wanted to gain their trust and get them to think you're on their side, while you work to take them down from the inside. That's your plan. So you tell the jury you're doing the secret undercover operation to take down the mob from the inside.
The 3D chess, if you will.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is all on tape. They're talking about all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, that's the way to do it. They're like laughing. They're like, yeah, what a great idea. This is awesome. Yes. So these tapes were not the only evidence that the FBI had against old Jim Traficant, though. He was not indicted until, 1982? But they had found these tapes earlier and they had confronted him with these tapes about a year before he was indicted.
Really?
They brought him in, sat him down, and pressed play. He's like, I don't know no mafia people. And they pressed play and he's like, oh, shit.
Okay.
And he fucking crumbled.
Of course.
He just fell apart. He confessed everything.
I mean,
he's like,
yeah.
I did it. I did all of it. Everything. It's all true. He even signed a written confession in front of two witnesses who were FBI agents.
Damn.
And agreed to cooperate with the FBI's investigation if they offered him immunity.
Of course.
He's like, I can't go to prison. I'm too delicate for this.
Look at me. I folded like the cheapest of suits.
Exactly. So he's like, okay. He signs this confession. He's like, I'll cooperate. It's cool. Everything's going to be fine. But then several weeks later, he suddenly recanted his confession after realizing that part of his immunity agreement would mean that he would have to resign as sheriff. And the reasons for his resignation would be made public. He's like, oh, no. You can't take my job and tell people that I lied to them. You can't do that. So suddenly his tune changed. And he told the FBI, I don't want immunity. I haven't done anything wrong.
No.
I haven't done a single thing wrong. Nothing.
But the tapes, bruh.
Nope. What tapes? What are you talking about? So after this, instead, he decided to focus his energy on getting the public on his side before the trial. He launched a campaign to accuse the FBI and the local government of corruption. They're so corrupt. You can't even believe how corrupt.
Oh my
They're
God.
The most corrupt I've ever seen.
I'm so sad this is not my scandal right now.
I can't believe you've never heard this. This is and it's not even that long ago.
This shit this is
while
wild.
You were alive in Ohio.
Wow.
So he publicly calls for the arrest of 24 FBI agents in Ohio for dereliction of duty. And a judge is like, get the fuck out of here. You don't have any evidence. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So then when that didn't work, he accused Youngstown's mayor and the city's finance director of the same thing, of dereliction of duty. So as if this behavior leading up to his trial was not bizarre enough, after he was officially publicly indicted, he announced that he was firing his attorney and he was going to represent himself in court, saying that he couldn't afford a lawyer and shouldn't need one anyways because, quote, I never did a fucking thing wrong.
I love when people represent themselves.
It's so good. Yes.
It is always like such a treat. People without legal degrees specifically. Like yes, that's my favorite. Like,
oh, he was clueless.
Delicious.
Yeah. So on his first day of trial in May of 1983, he showed up to court in a short sleeve shirt and started calling himself my client.
Oh my God. What?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's so good. I want to hear this. It sounds very like, wow. Yeah. My client. And there's no one sitting in like the chair that you can refer to. Like, you mean you, bruh? Like, okay. You're so not supposed to do that.
Well, he didn't know. He's not a lawyer. He's just a country folk. He's just... he said that I took this out of my outline, but a lot of the time he's like, I'm just a truck driver's son. He's just folksy and like he's a man of the people.
Okay, that's how you go to jail. But okay, cool.
Well, so in his opening statement, stood right in front of the jury and told them to like staring in their eyes, I fucked the mob.
You can say that in court?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm like, wow.
He went on to say that he was conducting, quote, the most unorthodox sting in the history of Ohio politics. And said that he deserved an Academy Award for his acting skills undercover because he convinced the Cleveland family that he was on their side so that he could use their muscle to take down the more powerful Pittsburgh family. He said, quote, what I did and what I set out to do very carefully was to design a plan whereby I would destroy and disrupt the political influence and the mob control over Mahoning County.
Okay.
So essentially he's using the exact same defense that he laid out on those tapes.
Yeah.
But like now the Cleveland family is involved too because it's not the Pittsburgh family accusing him, it's the FBI. So he adjusted his approach a little bit, but like, it's the same fucking thing that he said he was going to do on these tapes.
When they play these tapes, sir, you're going to look stupid.
So throughout the trial, every time the FBI presented their evidence, he came up with some like cockamamie answer for every accusation. He admitted to taking money from the mafia, but said that he had to, to try and fake loyalty to the mafia. But he also wanted to make sure that his opponent in the campaign wouldn't get the money instead because his opponent would have just taken it rather than him who was going to use it in a secret sting operation.
Okay. So his like opponent would have taken it, whereas he...
And just like...
He took it.
Yeah, but it's the way he took it was different. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
It was with a little T as opposed to a big T.
Exactly. With a twinkle in his eye, he took it. Yes.
Wow.
You have no idea what's
I'm already
coming.
So tickled. Like I can, like my face is hot. I'm laughing so hard.
I love this story so much. So he claimed that he had to lie to the FBI when they first brought him in because he couldn't trust them. Since so many of their agents had mob ties and he didn't want to blow his cover in the secret sting operation. He also claimed that he never told anyone in his office or in the government of Youngstown about his secret sting operation because he couldn't trust anyone. Not the mayor, not the prosecutors, not even his own deputies. He didn't know who had mob ties, but not him. He wasn't corrupt. Everyone else was.
Yes.
I know you are, but what am I?
Wow.
So when the tapes were played in court, he acknowledged to the jury, yes, that is my voice that you are hearing, but...
No, that's my client's voice.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Those tapes have been doctored to incriminate me. Those are not the tapes in their original state.
Stop it. Wow. Yes.
That's my voice, but I didn't say those things. And then when it came to his signed confession, the FBI forged it.
Oh, of course. Obviously.
Yeah. He never signed anything like that. And when an FBI agent took the stand to testify that he had seen James Traficant sign this confession in the offices of the FBI, he jumped out of his chair and yelled, "That's a goddamn lie."
Wow, that's so theatrical.
Mm-hmm. So basically, he's saying, yeah, I'm not corrupt at all. Everyone else around me
Everyone else, the FBI, all these mafia people who I have no ties with.
Not at all.
You heard that I had ties with them. That was not me. Nope. That was the FBI who's corrupt.
It's all lies. Yeah, everyone's corrupt. They're trying to frame me to stop me from taking down the mob.
Oh, wow. That's really stupid, but okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like literally the kind of defense that like a little kid would come up with.
Shit I've ever heard. Yeah.
It's so fucking dumb, but it worked.
Wait.
On June 15th, 1983, after 4 days of deliberation, the jury delivered their verdict, not guilty.
Wait a second. Okay. Actually, no, give me a moment. Uh-huh. Not guilty? All of them not guilty?
Not guilty.
Huh.
He was acquitted.
I mean, he's making up the worst lies in like the history of the world.
And he literally said what his plan was on the tapes that the jury heard. He's on tape saying,
"Did he buy them off?" Like, did he like?
When questioned, the jury members said that they had doubts about the reliability of the tapes.
I just assume because it's all such an obvious sham that. Yeah. Okay.
Nope. It was. So. When Sheriff Traficant went back to Youngstown, he went back a celebrity.
Yeah.
3,000 people showed up to his post-trial victory party, and they sold t-shirts bragging about his acquittal. And so we're going to find out what happens next after this short break.
Wow. What a tale. Okay.
Literally, this happened like an hour from you. I can't believe that you don't know about this story. Yeah.
I mean, I guess because he was acquitted, and I guess he did nothing wrong.
He did nothing wrong. He didn't do a fucking thing wrong.
Yes. Wow. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ohio makes no sense in so many ways. So I guess this is, I shouldn't be too shocked, but wow.
This is not the end of the story.
I'm just like, oh, how much time did he get?
Yeah. No. Zero time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then we'll be right back.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Cass.
And we're the hosts of Shared History,
a comedic history podcast exploring the stories of the often overlooked or underrepresented.
The people and events your history books may have glossed over, whitewashed, man-washed, or left out completely.
From the Mayan creation myth to the Deaf President Now movement of the 1980s.
From ancient scientist Avicenna to first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Wilma Mankiller.
If you saw it in a footnote once,
or have never heard of it,
we are here to share it with you.
Join us in a rotating guest list featuring scholars, writers, teachers, entertainers, entrepreneurs, subject matter experts, and more.
Tune in to Shared History on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, you know the drill.
And follow us at Shared Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
And as always,
share you later.
All right, so we are back, and we're about to find out what happened next. So what do you think that he would have done? You know, he goes back to Youngstown, a fucking celebrity. People are even more obsessed with him than they already were. So what does he do next?
More crime, because there's no punishments.
He ran for Congress.
Wow, dude, don't do that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do that. National attention on all of your crimes? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So,
even though
but I get why he would though, because it's there's been no consequences. Like
not at all.
He must feel like if Jesus was real, like that feeling.
Yeah. He's a white man.
Yeah.
Straight
he just got
man.
Away with such obvious crimes though. Like not
so
just,
stupid.
Yeah. Wow.
So stupid.
Like was not even trying to make up good lies. But also, he knew that it didn't matter.
It didn't fucking matter.
So,
it didn't matter.
Oh, wow. Damn, he won, didn't he?
Yeah. So even though he was not endorsed by the Democratic Party, he defeated six other people in the Democratic primary in 1984, and he won his election by almost 20,000 votes.
I was joking that he won.
Okay. No, he became Congressman Jim Traficant.
God.
In 1984.
I mean, Ohio is gonna Ohio.
So in Congress, once he got to Congress, he said, quote, "People identified with me having the balls to stand up. When you think about it, that's what it is. Balls." End quote.
Okay. Like, wait, but what was he asked? I'm curious to know the question.
I don't actually know.
Okay.
And he's like, "I stood up against the like mob system and the like government system, and I won because I'm awesome and everyone loves me."
God, he's like the worst person.
Mm-hmm. So he told the press, "I want to do a good job. I don't want to be a freak show." And he went on to be just that. He quickly became a favorite of cartoonists and journalists looking for a ridiculous quote from a ridiculous man in our country's government. So rather than sort of like the, you know, professional looking suits that most of his colleagues would wear to Congress.
No.
Congressman Traficant preferred to wear polyester leisure suits, bell bottoms, plaid. Skinny ties, cowboy boots.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving us Luke's.
He was serving Luke's. He had these long, shaggy, gray sideburns. And in this sort of like strange, unruly mound of hair on the top of his head.
Is this the photos that you sent me?
Yes. Sits so high on the top of his head. Almost seemed to defy gravity. The first four photos. Look at those first four photos first.
Oh.
His hair.
What is happening?
Why is it like sitting on top of his head?
Is that just like hairspray? It feels like there's like something in it. Like a back in the day when women used to have those like
bump-its
in their hair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bump it.
Like
yeah.
He had a bump it.
Whoa. Yeah. Like,
oh my God, the second one. I mean, I like it. I like that he's giving
so
us
strange.
Like a Luke. There's something happening in there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow. What did he?
Where is it the last one where he's wearing the denim jacket?
Yeah. Is that,
his hair is literally like sitting on top of his head.
He's a bump it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many people guessed that it was probably a toupee, but it was like sat. Incorrectly, like it's just sitting on top of his head instead of fitted to his head.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Yeah, totally.
So he became famous when he was in Congress. He became famous for these quick minute-long speeches that he would give on the House floor. He did this all the time, gave these minute speeches. They usually featured crude language, confusing logic, and dated references to Star Trek.
Oh, that's left field.
Uh-huh. He often ended most of his speeches by saying, "Beam me up, Mr. Speaker," as a way of sort of like voicing his frustrations with the way things were, like saying like, "Get me out of here. Beam me up. Things are too crazy." He would sometimes add, "There is no intelligent life left in the Congress."
Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but so beam me up.
I'm so embarrassed for him.
Beam me up basically became his like catchphrase throughout his career. He's just like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Beam me up. So I have one more picture I would like you to look at.
Star Trek didn't ask for that.
No.
Seriously, don't put this on them. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's like his hair.
It's a t-shirt.
Yeah.
It says beam me up, but with his hair, with his like weird tall hair.
Yeah, like his hair in like relief and like beam me up. Wow. What?
Yeah.
People
love
this shit?
They lived their lives.
Mm. I mean, any politician that has a catchphrase, like, you've been hoodwinked, friends. Like,
what are you doing? Why are you supporting this?
The people that you're supporting, if they have a catchphrase, like, this is not the way.
Yeah.
You've been had.
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe it's really fun. And I mean, he does seem very fun and out there, but wow.
Literally wearing like fucking like 70s leisure suits to Congress in the, like, weird 90s, denim. 80s and 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
So while he was able to bring some federal money into his struggling district in Ohio, he usually just used his congressional seat to gripe about what he considered government overreach.
Ooh, of course.
The tax code and the IRS, which he called the Internal Rectal Service, were frequent targets of his.
That's the white man's plight.
Mm-hmm.
Just having to pay for the civilization that they enjoy.
He was probably so mad at them, though, because in 1987, the federal government took him back to court for not paying taxes on the $163,000 in bribes that he admitted to taking in 1979 in his last trial.
That's right.
That was like a key point in his last trial. It's like, yeah, I took the money, but like, I'm a good guy. But he never paid taxes on it. And he never like gave it back or...
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So the IRS took him to court and sued him for back taxes. And unlucky for him, he lost this trial and had his congressional salary garnished for years.
Until
the debt was paid. Yes.
I love that for him.
Yes. But then, after this, he proposed a measure that would limit the ability of the IRS to seize the property of people charged with tax evasion. And this proposal became part of a tax reform bill that was signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1998. 70 just passed away. For all of
them. Wait.
Yes.
Oh my god. Yeah, I'm effectively dead. I mean, okay, I don't even know where to begin. The man has been convicted of tax fraud, and yet we're allowing him to push forward a bill that's advocating for tax fraud,
limiting the power of the IRS, literally. And everyone's like, "Yeah, I'll vote for that. It's great. I love it."
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Our government, y'all, exhibit A through Z, and it passed.
Oh, yeah. Signed into law in 1998.
It's still probably on the books.
I would assume. I didn't actually look because I was like, oh, my God.
I mean, they're not going to...
It was... He got it, like, squeezed in as part of a tax reform bill.
The balls of it all. The caucasity and the... But also it passed, so like, wow.
I mean, he's getting away with all of it. Everything.
All of it, yeah.
I mean, he did lose the trial against the IRS, but like...
Yeah.
He had his congressional salary garnished. Big fucking deal.
Nothing, yeah.
Yeah.
Versus like all of the bribes he's probably still getting from like both mafias somehow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, so he remained incredibly popular with his constituents back in Ohio.
Stop it! Of course he did.
He won re-election after re-election after re-election, over and over and over, often with over 70% of the vote. Over 70% of the vote.
Damn.
Things were going so good for him.
But
then, March of 2000... While he was campaigning for his 9th term in Congress, he put on an uncharacteristically somber black jacket and tie, and he went on C-SPAN and gave this rambling 40-minute-long interview that one reporter called surely one of the strangest moments in C-SPAN's history.
Have you watched it? Is it amazing?
It is. I'm about to play some of it for you. Yes.
I love it.
So looking straight into the camera on C-SPAN, this is not like Fox News, mind you, C-SPAN.
I mean, no one watches C-SPAN.
I know, but I'm saying, like, it's so dull and so serious, C-SPAN, you know what I mean?
It's nothing. It's like watching a wall.
It's not infotainment. This is like the dullest, driest form of news that you could possibly find.
Yeah.
And this is what he chooses, he chooses to do this.
I love it.
So he looks straight into the camera and announces, quote, "I will probably be under indictment in the next few months." And then over the course of this rambling interview, he accused the Justice Department of fraud and of trying to ruin his reputation just before the election. So I do have a couple of clips here. I have two clips from this interview.
So wait, what did they even do? Like, he's like, how are they trying to ruin? Okay, I'll find out, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
Right before the election, hawks are circling, buzzards circling, sharks circling, releasing news articles trying to kill the traffic in election. Let me tell you what, 20 years ago, not quite, I was the only American in the history of the United States to defeat the Justice Department in a RICO case pro se. That means representing myself without being an attorney and going through a full term trial. They had a false confession. That false confession was corroborated by forensic science, or you and I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be watching this show from Leavenworth. They have targeted me ever since, and here's what I'm saying. Scared to death, not acting macho. I am targeting them. They better not make a damn mistake.
What?
I'm targeting the Justice Department.
With what? Like, arsenal? I'm confused.
Yeah, he doesn't fucking know.
Just me as a citizen.
Yes. Not being macho.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah.
I'm going to fight like a junkyard dog in the face of a hurricane. And I hope my people stand with me and give me that chance. Now, I know there's something unusual about this trial. Because here's the bottom line. I can show a continuing animus of the Justice Department with a false confession almost 20 years ago. And if I beat him, you're now watching one of the richest men in America. Because I'm going to sue their assets all apart.
Okay, so this is him talking about the trial where he said that I accepted these bribes.
So he is saying that he's saying that he is about to be indicted.
Yeah.
But he never says why.
Oh.
And then he says they tried to get me 20 years ago, but they lost because they didn't have anything on me. And they're just trying to ruin me for no reason because they're mad that they lost.
Hmm.
But then when this poor interviewer from C-SPAN who's used to people being like, and then the tax code, this poor guy is like, so what are you actually accused of here? And he's like, I don't know.
He says, I don't know?
He says, I don't know.
Stop it.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Yeah.
I don't know?
Yes.
Bitch, you just went off on a tirade. But
right? Yeah. So as it turned out, 6 years before this, in 1994, there was a failed mob hit on a local prosecutor in Youngstown, and it brought the FBI back to Mahoning County, Ohio. And as the investigation went on, it sort of snowballed from the initial arrest of 28 mob associates to the eventual conviction of over 70 people.
Wow.
Including a judge, a prosecutor, a sheriff, and a former aide of Jim Traficant's. Of course, people were sort of like trying to get lighter sentences after conviction, and they agreed to cooperate with the FBI as this investigation continued. And all of these convictions led them right back to the most powerful politician in the region, United States Congressman James Traficant.
Wow.
Yes. The other thing about him going on C-SPAN is like he did this almost like, not quite, but almost a year before the indictment actually was dropped. So like he just went on TV and was like rambling and then nothing happened for almost a year.
Yeah.
But finally, they brought 10 charges against him, including bribery, fraud, tax evasion, and racketeering.
Okay.
They also accused him of forcing his congressional staff to give him kickbacks.
Really?
His staff had to kick back part of their paychecks in exchange for well-paid positions. And he's also accused of making his aides bale hay and clean horse stalls on his farm in Ohio
Congressional
time.
No way.
Yeah, they're on the clock as congressional aides doing chores on his farm in Ohio.
Oh my God, this guy.
Yes.
This man.
He also allegedly accepted free goods, services, and labor from Ohio businessmen in exchange for political influence.
Yeah.
The things that he accepted included, among other things, a gift of luxury cars, $26,000 in free repairs on his rotting wooden houseboat, the construction of a new barn on his farm, and free oats for his horses.
This is very Ohio.
Yeah. So he decided yet again to defend himself in court.
No. I mean, I guess it worked the first time.
Yeah. It didn't work the second time, though.
Okay.
But just like the first time, he attempted to use his platform to sow seeds of doubt by accusing his accusers.
Let me guess, of fraud and like
being
the worst. But he's innocent.
He made repeated corruption accusations against the FBI, against former U.S. Attorney Janet Reno, and against federal prosecutors in Ohio.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You're going against the attorney general? Yes. No, friend. You've shot too high. Uh-huh. No.
Oh, she's in cahoots with the mob.
The president. He's out to get me.
Uh-huh.
That was
He also used his power as a congressman to introduce legislation in Congress to establish an independent federal agency to investigate the Justice Department.
I mean, he got basically tax fraud approved.
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
He was doing this echoing an earlier claim that the FBI agents in Ohio were being paid by the mob to ruin him.
Dude.
So then he goes to this.
Your name next is Jimbo. Trial. No one cares about you.
Literally.
I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
Literally. Sorry, not sorry. So during his opening statement, he said that he couldn't believe these ridiculous accusations against him.
Man.
Using his congressional catchphrase, beam me up. This is just so ridiculous. Get me out of here. Beam me up. During his opening statement.
Dude, you're lucky it worked once.
Like, I know. Yeah,
honestly. Literally. You can't keep doing this.
He sure can. He went on to warn the jury that all of the witnesses who were about to testify against him had been coerced into lying by the United States government.
Wow.
Because they just had a vendetta against him because he had already beaten them in court once before. And they just couldn't take it.
Living in Ohio in the 80s. Like, what that...
This is like, 2001, this trial.
Oh, well, anytime, really.
Yeah.
Anytime in America. But, wow. What a high he must have been on. He thought he was going to get off because he already got off.
He thought he was doing something.
Yeah.
He thought he was doing something.
Yeah, he thought he ate.
Yes. Nobody can hear me.
You can't hear Tuck's fake imaginary nails that just clacked. Okay. Uh-huh.
He ate.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. So his defense during this trial was sloppy.
You don't say, sloppy.
Rambling and often filled with profanity.
Wow. Was he wearing denim? Please tell me he was wearing denim.
I think he was wearing polyester. He did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
At one point, he told the jury that the prosecution had, quote, the testicles of an ant. Because that's pertinent to his case.
I mean, I have so many questions. So we know, like, what in what context? Like, how does it... What was the sentence before this?
Yeah, he was just pissed. I don't know.
Wow.
When he was asked about making his staff work for free on his farm, he claimed, quote, some of them wanted some exercise.
Oh my God, I love that. But wow.
They just wanted some exercise. So I was offering to let them bale hay for me for free congressional time.
Yeah. I was helping them with their fitness journeys. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's a crime.
Yeah, literally.
And also their testicles are really small. So just think about that.
Minuscule, yes. He also repeatedly mentioned wanting to kick or even stab his accusers in the crotch.
Only to disregard all of the opposing counsel has said. I think they're delusionary. I think they've had something funny for lunch in their meal.
Delusionary?
Handcuffed, the chain link fence flogged, and all of their hearsay evidence should be thrown the hell out. And if they lie again, I'm going to go over and kick them in the crotch. Thank you very much.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's not contempt of court, though. You're not supposed to say all of it. I mean, you're not supposed to say half of that, let alone.
But okay. This second trial or third trial, I guess, at this point, whether he realized it or not, felt very different from his first trial. This trial, he had a female judge.
Ha!
And she was not having this at all.
You don't say. She was not charmed by his brilliance?
Yes. She repeatedly cut off Trafficant's rants and raves during his, I don't even know what to call it. It's not defense.
It's not defense. It's like the opposite of defense.
Yeah.
However, it worked in his last trial. So maybe.
I mean, that was 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, but still.
But still, it was the same kind of flavor.
Yeah. But so she repeatedly cut him off during his rants and told him that he needed to stick to the evidence and watch his mouth.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow. Wow.
After a two-month-long trial, the jury of 10 women and 2 men convicted Congressman Trafficant on all counts.
Yep.
They got Miguel.
Too many women.
Yeah, exactly.
Seeing through your lies.
Literally.
Your obvious lies. Wow.
Obvious lies. So ridiculously obvious. So even with a prison sentence looming,
oh, no.
He refused to resign his seat in Congress.
I'm not surprised.
And forced the House to vote on whether or not to remove him.
Did they remove him?
So in the days before this was going to go to vote in Congress, he told the press, quote,
oh, no.
When I walk on the floor for the final execution, I'll wear a denim suit. I'll walk in there like Willie Nelson, John Wayne, Will Smith, Men in Black.
No.
James Brown. Maybe I'll do a Michael Jackson moonwalk.
Actually, okay. Leave all of these men. Did he say Clint Eastwood? I feel like Clint can stay. Everyone
John
else.
Wayne. It was John Wayne.
Okay.
He's seriously. Also, yeah. We'll give you John Wayne. You can.
We'll give you John Wayne. John Wayne. Yeah. Yes. That tracks. everyone else, no.
But even after all of his big talk, on the day of his vote, he showed up to Congress in a dark jacket and tie to defend himself, insisting once again that all of the witnesses in his trial were lying
against him
and that the Justice Department was out to get him.
Totally.
He closed it by saying, vote your conscience, nothing personal.
Okay, nothing about their testicles?
All right. So the House voted to expel him by a vote of 420. To one.
Who's the one?
I knew you were going to ask this, so I actually had to. I had to look this up because none of the articles said who the one was. So
I want to know what
was
the one
this
is.
One person
so bad.
It was a Democrat from California named Gary Condit, who had recently lost re-election because he was having his own scandal. I didn't really look very far into it because I was like, ooh, maybe I can use this later.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had just like lost big in an election because there was some sort of like sex scandal or something.
Okay. Wow. So one vote. That's like
420 to
one. That's so many people. I mean, his lies are so apparent, but still, that's like
so ridiculous.
That's so amazing. Oh my God. I bet he was like shook.
Crushed, like, I'm sure.
Whoa.
Crushed.
How?
Yeah. Apparently, this is only the second time since the Civil War that the House had expelled a member of their own for unethical conduct.
I mean, this guy was doing too much.
He was doing so much. All
of it. He was making so much noise, too. Yeah. And like pointing at like the government, the Justice Department, like, don't, you did what you did and like you got all the money. Like, just shut up. Like, don't.
Literally. Like, why are you being so loud about it all?
Why are you being so loud? Again, you're doing crime wrong.
Blatant. Yeah. Forcing your fucking, there was like, I took so much out of my outline. Like, he was making his staff give him money back for their jobs.
That's crazy.
And he was making them burn the envelopes that they gave the cash in case they could use it for evidence. And then one of them was like, wait, this is fucked up, and kept like a half burned envelope.
He was making them burn their envelopes?
Yeah.
Whoa. This is, wow.
So ridiculous.
Jesus.
Just and it's so like, much.
I mean, I guess this guy is like such a like outlier, but like these are the type of people who get into politics and like don't want to leave.
In Ohio.
Yeah.
And they don't have to leave because they're getting 70% of the vote.
Oh my God, right? Oh, man. Wish I had no conscience.
Literally. I mean, fuck like worrying about imposter syndrome. I just don't want to have a conscience.
But also like telling such bold ass lies, but also people like, I guess, believing your lies. I feel like that trial
getting away
really,
with it. Oh, it fueled so much of this. Yeah. He thought he was fucking invincible.
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, I can make up shit that don't make no sense. And like people will let me off because they like me. Because
I'm just so charming.
Yeah. 70% of people. What? That's so upsetting. But also not that surprising, but just sad.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the story of Ohio. Like,
yeah.
Not surprising, just sad.
So he had officially been convicted, but he hadn't been sentenced yet. He had been expelled from Congress.
Is he running to Mexico? Like, I feel like this guy's going to do something.
So with sentencing looming, in disgrace after being expelled from Congress, what do you think he did next?
Running away? Or maybe doing like a New York Times op-ed about how he was wronged and how the president is implicated in trying to be against him.
That is a very good guess, but you're wrong. He decided to run for Congress as an independent, telling his colleagues, quote, don't be surprised if I win behind bars.
This man is crazy. Like,
plenty of people in Ohio were still completely loyal to him. And even after everything that had happened, after all of it, he finally was sentenced and sent
Don't
to prison.
Don't say he won.
Election, he didn't win.
Okay.
On election day, from prison, he is in federal prison. He received 28,000 votes, coming in second behind Tim Ryan.
Ha!
AKA Tim What's-His-Nuts.
Not Tim What's-His-Nuts. Wow. Wait, how close was it, though?
Like he got like somewhere between 15% and 20% of the vote.
That's too much, but still, okay.
Literally, there were three people in the election and he came in second.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn. So this was like recent.
Yeah. This would have been 2001, I think.
Damn. Yeah. I know Tim Ryan was around for that long. But.
So Tim Ryan was actually given his seat when he was expelled from Congress. His first term was not elected. He was next
Stop
in line.
It. Oh, he was
after Jim
Traficant.
Yeah. But then when he actually was up for election, he beat Jim Traficant, who ran as an independent from prison.
Wow. Yeah.
So Stephanie and I, when the Democratic primaries happened a couple of years ago and the fucking Democrats put up 45,000
75 people. Like It was a clown car just full of people.
They had to have two different debates for these people because there were so many of them that they couldn't get them on the same stage in one night.
Oh my God.
And Tim Ryan was one of them. And I was like, who the fuck is this dude from Ohio? And Stephanie's like, I don't know. So we just started calling him Tim What's His Nuts.
I still don't really know exactly what his face looks like. I know that he looks very similar to de Blasio. And just I think younger. He's tall too.
That's the only thing that's memorable about him is he's tall. Yeah.
Yeah. They're both really tall. And if I had to pick one out of the lineup, like, I don't think I could really do it. Like if it was just the two of them, it's like choose which one is Tim Ryan.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult.
Yeah.
It would be a coin toss for me.
Yeah. So about 3 months before the election.
I can't believe this man though.
I mean.
But also the audacity that he's had prior to this.
I don't know what he thought was going to happen. Like if he had won, which he thought he was going to win.
Clearly.
If he had, did he think that like people were going to be like, oh, well, we can't send him to prison. He's a congressman.
I think so. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what he thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So about 3 months before the
election. I feel like that's what Trump thinks as well. Like if I'm president again, like they can't touch me. Because
that's
they didn't touch
100%
me during...
why he's running again.
Yeah, that's why he's running again. Because he's really facing prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was sentenced to 8 years in prison about
that's
3 months before the election. Not at all enough time. And he was ordered to pay more than $250,000 in fines and restitution. And the judge in the case, Judge Leslie Brooks Wells, told him, quote, "The truth, sir, is rarely in you."
Facts.
Yes.
Facts on facts. Yes.
"You were howling that you were going to fight like a junkyard dog in the eye of a hurricane. And you did fight that way to protect a junkyard full of deceit and corruption and greed."
Damn.
Boom. Yeah. I don't know this for sure, but I want to believe that she is a black woman.
Yeah. I was going to say either she's a black woman or she's a lesbian.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Down with the bullshit at all. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not having him at all.
Yeah. She's definitely not a regular white lady.
Yeah.
Like, I would be shook if that was the case. Wow. That's so funny that feels very black to use like your words against you.
Literally. And he didn't say that in court. He said that in an interview before trial that he was going to fight like a junkyard dog in the eye of a hurricane.
She black.
Yeah. Yeah. Petty LaBelle over here. Yes.
Wow, that is really, really funny.
Yeah.
But I can't believe he got so far, but also I can believe he got so far because Ohio, and he's a white man who's just, I guess, giving off the appearance of being outside the mainstream.
Exactly. He's an outsider. He's an advocate.
Like, look at me. I have crazy hair and I hate the government.
Yeah, I'm the son of
like
a truck driver. I protect the steel workers in the Rust Belt. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So when he went into prison, he was finally forced to reveal to the prison guards that his bizarre tower of hair was in fact a toupee.
A toupee.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. Do we have pictures of him without the toupee?
I do not. No. I don't. I'm sorry.
That would be delicious. That'd be so delicious.
So he served 7 years of his 8-year sentence and was released in 2009. And the following year, after he got out, he tried yet again to run for Congress as an independent, but again came in second in a 3-way race against Tim What's His Nuts.
He came in second again? Damn.
Yes. People fucking live for him to this day.
Shit. Okay. I was just going to say maybe the third person was like a write-in and like had but people like him. People actually loved him.
Their lives for him. Yeah.
Damn.
People are literally that t-shirt thing that I sent you that was like, beat me up with his hair. That's like new. That is currently for sale.
It looks very new. I was going to ask. Yeah. I'm like, this doesn't look like it's from the 80s.
No,
like,
you buy that right now.
Like this. Okay.
There are multiple Jim Traficant t-shirts for sale on the internet at this very moment.
So terrible and sad, but
yeah. Also, despite the fact that he died in 2014 at age 73.
Really?
He was 73 years old. He died after an accident on his farm involving an antique tractor.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I know. I don't know.
Yeah. I had more information. I was like, people don't need to hear this. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, there was some of the articles that I read were like, ha ha, it's funny that he died on the farm that he like went to prison for. Like he, like the, in the pole barn that he had built for free that sent him to prison. Like, yeah. this is fucked up. I love some dark humor. Like, yeah. I don't need that.
Well, I mean, I'm glad he's not scamming anymore, but yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
What a life that he lived, though.
Literally. You know?
And that there's t-shirts still being made in his honor.
Yeah. He started as a high school football star and like a drug program head in the 70s.
Officer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Telling kids that they're going to get free drugs.
Literally.
Telling them lies.
What to look for. Yeah. What drugs look like and how to get them. Yeah. So that's the story of Jim Traficant.
Wow. That was exceptional. I don't even, like, I have so many thoughts and feelings, and I'm definitely going to Google this man once we get off because I want to see him without his hair. Really, really badly.
You won't find photos of him without his hair. I'm so surprised that you had, I was certain that you were going to like, oh yeah, Jim Traficant. Why didn't I do this story? Or I can't believe you're stealing the story from me.
No, I've never heard of this man. I don't.
Yeah. He's like, all of this happened within our lifetime.
I know. Yeah. In the recent past.
Like an hour from you.
Yeah.
Or from where you grew up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been in Ohio for like a while, but still I don't know.
You should ask your parents if they remember him.
My mom probably knows about him because my mom loves mess. Like lives her life for mess. Like it is her lifeblood. It keeps her. It's why she has no wrinkles somehow. Mess.
It's her filler.
It is her filler. 1,000%. She's always like, "Did you hear?" No. Like you can stop there. I did not hear. Just tell
me. But tell me.
Like I'm not reading the repository. Like I'm not. Oh, I don't hear the mess. I think I told you, I don't know if I told you this on the air or something, but like my mom loves to find like lawyers accused of like fraudulent things, usually like sexual misconduct. Oh, she loves to clip those stories from my sister who's a lawyer and she like leaves them on the table. And my dad gets so mad at her because he's just like, why are you doing this? And she's like, these people are lawyers and they're committing crimes. And she's like, what does this have to do with Jessica?
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
I mean,
it sounds like she wants Jessica to start a podcast with her.
Kind of. Jessica loves mess as well. So it's like she's clipping mess for her. There's a lot of mess in Ohio and it's too much for me.
Well, speaking of mess, in my research for this story, I found a lot of people, so many articles that were saying that Jim Traficant walked so that Donald Trump could run. So many people were saying this.
Don't say that.
I know. Well, there are certainly some significant similarities.
I mean, he was a con as well.
But like he was actually, in his own weird way, he was doing some good things. Like he went to jail to try and protect people from getting their homes foreclosed.
Yeah. Trump would have never.
Would never.
Would never.
He'd be like, ew, a homeless person.
Yeah. Ugh. Not even a homeless person, a poor person would be enough.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
No.
Yeah. But well, you know, there are some significant differences. They're so similar.
Are they?
I mean, like the way he talks and just wanting to be a man of the people and like getting, he's more concerned with people liking him and getting liking people on his side
of
than
course,
like,
yeah. What? And the fact that he has a fan base as well.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people merch.
Oh my God, you're right. Wow, the merch.
Yeah. Shit. But all I want to say here is that if Trump ever does go to trial, I would love to see him try and defend himself.
Oh, he's not
How
dumb.
Delicious. No,
like,
he's dumb, but he's not that dumb.
Yeah. He knows that his lawyers are the only reason why he wasn't in jail in the 90s.
Except he hires lawyers like fucking Giuliani. Yeah.
Well, he hires lawyers who will work for free.
Exactly.
Until he cuts them loose. So I think it's just like financial.
Yeah.
And like he likes people who blow smoke up his ass. And I think Giuliani is so far gone, and he's always been a bad person. So it's not like this is aberrant behavior.
Yeah. Mostly though, I just hope if he ever does go to trial, which like, we'll see. I just hope that he gets a female judge and a majority female jury.
Oh my God. If he gets a black judge and like a majority female jury, well, unless it's majority white women and then all bets are off.
Yeah.
I mean, we know actually, because most of them will ride for him. But maybe there'll be some like white Latinas who can throw it off, perhaps.
It depends on where the court is too. Like if it's in a major city, even white women might not vote for him. It depends on whether or not they're married. That's what all the polling said. Like married women are going to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Unmarried city dwellers don't like him.
Yeah, aren't fucking with him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get married, ladies. I've been divorced.
You're going to be voting for Trump before you know it.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
That's it. That's the end.
This story was a roller coaster. It had so much, and I can't believe I did not know about this man, but like, wow.
I had never heard of him either. I actually like...
How did you hear about him? I'm curious.
So when Russell and I were in Mexico City...
What?
Yeah, we were at dinner one night and these people sat down next to us and they happened to be... It was a young interracial couple from D.C. And somehow the fact that they lived in D.C. made Russell bring up the podcast and they're like, oh, this podcast about political scandals... Have you done Jim Trafficant? I was like, who? And they're like, what? You haven't talked about Jim Trafficant?
And wow. Then,
yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, oh yeah, my best friend is from Ohio. And he's like, how the fuck does she not know about this? How has she not done this story? And I was like, she has to know. She just hasn't gotten there yet, but I'm going to steal it from her.
Like his name doesn't even sound familiar at all. Then again, so I can't remember Tim Ryan's name. Like I had to like really coach myself on that.
Yeah.
And this is a man.
Jim, what's his nuts?
I mean, I will remember this man because he looks like something, you know?
Yes, he does.
He's giving us a Luke. Tim Ryan looks like nothing. He looks tall, but like...
That's enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's enough for most people. Yeah. That's why he is where he is, because he's tall. I sincerely believe that.
Well, he was also like handed that seat after Jim Trafficant went to prison.
Yeah. But I think he was in that position because he was tall. But I stand by that. Like, I will fight anyone who says otherwise. And like, there are all these memes about like, oh, is he cute or is he tall? Like, it's real. Like, it tricks our minds into believing that this person is like good or better just because they're taller.
Yeah. And for sure.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm so tall in Colombia. Like I am freakishly tall. It's so funny. When I was in Bogota, for me, the people were even shorter there because there were less tourists. Whereas here there are people from like other parts of Latin America and they are a little bit taller than Colombians. But when I was in Bogota, people would look at my feet. And I noticed this because I'm like, what's happening? To see if I was wearing heels.
Oh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I'm like, I am wearing flats, sir.
She's wearing flats.
I'm this tall and I'm sorry I'm casting a shadow upon you. that has nothing to do with this at all. But yeah, thank you for sharing this bad scandal. Yeah. It was such a journey. Like, wow.
Wow. I have kind of already planned out the season and Jim Trafficant was not a part of it. I was like, nope.
I'm so glad he was though. Yes, I'm so glad that you squeezed him in. And sometimes that's happened to me so many times where I hear something. And I'm like, wait, what? Like Edith.
Oh yeah.
I heard about that on a podcast and I'm just like, wait, no woman was president. Like she didn't run the shit. And I looked into it. I'm like, oh my God, this is my next scandal. Mm-hmm. I'm going to clear my calendar and like push everything back. Like I need to tell this story because it's el scandalo.
Yes. Amazing. Yeah. He was a surprisingly fun scandal to research.
Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising to me. The man was
just like because most of the scandals that we research are like
so terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my drink has been empty
same,
for a while. I'm quite parts as a result.
It's like the damn Sahara over here.
Basically. But yeah, I guess we are done.
That's it.
That's it, y'all. America's history is juicy. We just add vodka, some triple sec, lime juice, and it's real, real tasty. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Approach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
Thank you to our new audio editor. We could not do this.
It would be impossible.
Truly, it would be a mess. It would be shameful. And he makes
it would be almost as messy as Jim Traficant.
Facts. And that hurts me, but that's real.
It's really saying something.
Yeah, it really is. All right. Bye, y'all.
Good night, guys. Goodbye. Good night.
Good night. Fare ye well.
Au revoir. Bonne nuit.
Bonne nuit. Buenas noches. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.